So, gratefully that you guys are with us today. If you want to turn, we're going to be in Hebrews 12. We're going to be jumping ahead to Hebrews 12 and kind of looking at a different lesson. If you were here with us earlier, I kind of walked through some of the first verses, specifically talking about a better faith. That faith itself is something where we're supposed to feel. Do you guys remember the word that was here with me? Do you remember the D word I shared with you? There's supposed to be just a little bit of a sense of discontent. That faith in and of itself, when it says things, it's an assurance in the things hoped for. That hope is an assurance we can have that God is who He says He is. But the things hoped for means, but we're not there. It's like when I hope for a better marriage, I'm not there yet. I haven't finished that. I'm not done. I still work at being a better husband every day. That this concept of discontent is meant to go from, I know the world is broken, that's why the whole world feels like something's wrong. There's a sense of discontent. But once you become a Christian, that sense of discontent moves into, I'm not home yet. So I still feel like something's wrong, but instead I have a purpose. And I have a hope and a faith. And so I feel I'm just not done yet. I still have a role to fulfill in this world. I'm not content unless I am in the presence of God. And until I arrive at that, I will work towards that. So we walked through some different stories together. But I wanted to just mention, Byron and I, we went to lunch earlier and we got to talking a little bit about this. And obviously, anytime you have an entire series of lessons, all from the same book, all with the same title, just with a different word following, you're going to have a lot of overlap. A lot of overlap. It's going to happen naturally. It's why when I first saw that I was teaching on Friday, I went, yes, I'm going to mess up somebody else for once. And then I knew I was teaching twice today and then once tomorrow, I went, great, awesome. There's a good chance they will cover at least 90% of what I had planned to say. Which, if you're anything like me, that's a challenge, because then I get to a point where I go, okay, I got to find not something new, but I got to find a better way to tell it. A better way to share that, which is why I'm not normal. Again, I've said this, and I don't have a problem with it. Other people might, but I don't mind trying to share the stories of God a little bit differently. If you guys remember, we talked about a couple different people. Enoch, one of my favorites. The reason I love Enoch, and as it mentions him, it said he walked with God until he was no more. And it says he walked with God so well that they were finally like, God took him home. Like he did not taste death. My favorite part about that, and it's a way I've explained it before, it's like they were walking down a road, like hanging out, and then God was like, actually, my home is closer. You just want to come with me? And that's what happened. And they went home together. And I love those little ways of seeing stories a little bit differently. I want to share with you guys today possibly what I like to call the worst lesson ever to bring someone and to grow a church is what we're about to experience here. It is not what you would consider seeker friendly. Anybody ever heard that concept? It's like when you know the preacher's going to preach a sermon that's really going to hit on some topics people need to hear. This is one of those that you typically, and especially in our world, you go, not this Sunday, come another Sunday. Not that it's not valuable and not going to have a massive impact on people. It's the way our culture views this topic that they do not comprehend. And if I'm totally honest, I dare say there's many of us who have a misconception, misunderstanding on this very topic too. So we're going to be in Hebrews 12, looking beyond, starting in verse 3. Do you have a title there at the beginning of this little passage? What does it say? What's yours say? Okay. The discipline of God. Do not grow weary. Okay, so I can tell what versions are using based off of what's there. Like it's weird, but when I study, I can always tell how people view things differently. I don't know if you'll notice, but y'all do realize like there was no chapters and verses in the beginning. There's been a few times where I've said that and somebody went, "Whoa, huh?" Those were added much later for our convenience and our ability to read things and to find it faster. But in and of itself, it was never there. As a child, I used to love reading the different scriptures. And I remember a time when my dad actually said that to me. You realize the verses and chapters weren't there that way. There wasn't a breakdown. Instead, it was one continuous letter. And you catch so much more of context when you read them all together as one. So I just want to start. I'm going to back up to verse 1 of chapter 12 and then move in from there. Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a crowd of witnesses, let us also lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and protector and perfecter of our faith, who, for the joy that was set before him, endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. It starts in this beautiful outline of here's the story of the gospel. He came and he perfected everything. And it was beautiful. He did it by choice. He was not killed. His life was not taken from him. He gave it willingly. He lays it out. And then he follows that up. He follows up the cross of Jesus and goes, consider him who endured for sinners such hostility against himself, so that you may not grow weary or faint hearted. In your struggle against sin, you have not yet resisted to the point of shedding your blood. And have you forgotten the exhortation that addresses you as sons? My son, do not regard lightly the discipline of the Lord, nor be weary when reproved by him. For the Lord disciplines the ones he loves and chastises every son whom he receives. So let me ask you real quick something. Because oftentimes we have a bad understanding of these things. And so this is going to be interactive. And I know that I might get some, what you might feel like is a wrong answer. There are no right or wrong answers. If you don't know something, you ask. Oftentimes the worst problem we can have is when we're afraid of being wrong instead of seeking the truth. And a lot of people stop asking questions because they're simply afraid to be wrong. So, for example, is all pain bad? No, but your physical body typically tells you what? Yes, not a fan of this. Not a fan of pain. I don't know of anybody who purposefully is like, man, when I broke my arm, sure grateful for pain. There's nobody who thinks that way. Because we don't often realize what's happening. What does pain tell us? There's something wrong. There's something wrong. It tells us when something is wrong. Now, I need you to understand something very quickly. Oftentimes when I'm making a physical example, broken body of some way, we have this bad habit of aligning it with spiritual concepts automatically. So we're looking at this and going, well, I know something's wrong. So if you're in pain spiritually, then there must be something wrong. It's not how that works either. You see, physical pain and spiritual pain, while there is some correlation, don't always mix the same way. Physical pain tells you something's wrong. But there is a word here. Do you guys see the word discipline? Do you have another word? Chastening, okay? What else? Anybody have a different one? Yes, okay. So this word, discipline, the way we often think of it, it sounds like we're disciplining something, like there's something. This is not that word necessarily in the negative, because we kind of associate discipline with the negative. This is the positive aspect. This is instruction. This is when you're being instructed in something, when you're being taught something. Now, do you suddenly see a little bit different when it comes to this? Is all things, have you ever heard of the saying, anything worth doing is going to be hard? Now, we don't like that concept because we are the generation of as soon as possible and as fast as possible. I'm just going to guys give you this example. This is ridiculous, but Chick-fil-A has two drive-through lanes where I'm at. Because one is just too slow. I want you to think about this. Well, you know, a minute and a half, that's just ridiculous. I'm not waiting. If it's not a minute or less, I'm not going. Open up a separate lane. Let's do two lanes. Two fast food lanes. I don't even have the time to get out of my car to walk in an order. That's ridiculous. Why would I get out of my car? Do you guys have the Chick-fil-A now where you can call ahead of time and they bring it out to your car? That's a thing. I don't even have time to get in line in my car. I'm going to wait for it here. I'm going to order on my app and you just come out to my window. I might not even roll down the window. You're going to have to find a way in. It's so weird, but that's the world we live in, is it not? Fast, fast, fast. Easy, easy, easy. That's what we want. To work for something. I love working with teens. I work with teens all the time. But I hear some of the dumbest things. I worked so hard on that paper. Oh, awesome. How hard did you work on it? I spent like an hour. An hour. How long was the paper supposed to be? 5 pages? How long was it? Like 3 paragraphs? You work hard on that. Like, I work so hard, I have this job now. Oh, really? What do you do? I mow lawns. Oh, sweet. Okay, I can understand that. It'd be a tough job. How many lawns do you mow? Well, I just mow ours. That's not a job. That's a chore that you're getting paid for. Anybody here from an older generation that are like, I don't know what's wrong with these kids? Well, I'll tell you what's wrong with them is, and I always remind older folks, as I make fun of younger folks, because I'm part of the millennials, so I'm part of the problem. Sorry, we started it. Like, I can actually go, I'm at the top of the millennials. You're welcome. Like, it's one of those. But at the same time, I constantly remind my parents, who raised us? You did. Because you kept on wanting to give us better and nicer things, and you stopped teaching us life lessons. And you stopped teaching us how to cook and how to care for things and how to take care of our pets when we said we were going to give a pet. And you threatened to take it back, but you never did. Anybody? Tell me I'm wrong. Culturally speaking, this has happened across the board. Now, here's the fun part about all of this is I remind my parents. Now, my parents, I'm one of 6 kids. There's 4 of us older than 2 that are younger that are adopted that are 19 and 18. My other sister's like 36, 35, 32, or 33 and 32. And then there's 18 and 19. And all the older 4, all of us are married, have kids. I think there's 13 grandkids now, something like that. I had the least amount of kids with 2. It's weird. Our kids are the favorites though in the family. That's fine. That may be a personal opinion, but whatever. But my younger brothers and the rest, and I look at my family, and I'm very blessed because all of my siblings are in the church. All of my sisters are both married to deacons in the church. My brother is a godly man. My 2 younger brothers are godly young men. And I look at constantly at the way that our parents raised us, and I feel a blessing. And I'm just so unbelievably, I'll say whether it's lucky or blessing, whatever you want to say from that wording, I feel that I was given something different than most other people because I was required to work for things. And I was also given discipline. Anybody here? Let's try discipline. Spanking? Anybody who spanked as a kid? Where's my timeout generation? A couple of you guys are like, that was us. Yeah. Timeout. So, now I'm not going after one way or the other. What I'm saying is, I would have given anything to be a timeout kid. I would have loved to have thought about it for a while. You know? My dad instead was like, Italian leather or switch from outside. You know, it was one of those type of scenarios. I would have loved for that type of discipline. That was never afforded me. In fact, we knew the discipline came because it was not from my mom. My dad was the disciplinarian in the home. So my mom got to be the good guy, even though she had to deal with us every day at home. But it was always the threat was always wait till your father comes home. No, don't do that. She's like, no, I'm telling dad. No, don't tell dad. It's like, and my dad, if you ever know him, my dad has a doctorate in humanities. Not exactly known for being this just big, tough, rough guy. Instead, it's like, look at Michelangelo's painting. I'm not kidding. But then when dad was coming home, it was like, he's turning into the beast. But it was never anger. It was always discipline. And I never understood that until I had children of my own. We had choices. Have the belt, have the switch. Which one do you want? And I remember my sister as a child. She knew she was getting in trouble one day. And we came home and my dad went to grab the belt. He started spanking her and nothing happened. Like, she was just like, totally, like, what is wrong? Like, even we're like, why is she not screaming? Like, what's happening? Because she always screamed before. We found out she had gone and put on every pair of underwear she owned. So she had like 26 pair of underwear on. So it's like that thick. She wouldn't feel like anything the entire time. Some of these kids are like writing that down real quick for the next time. But the disciplines that we find, we don't always like those type of disciplines. We don't like the instruction concept. But I'm telling you, I've got a 9-year-old now. who was always super cautious, even though she broke her arm once, swinging around and dancing around. But she's super cautious about everything. I have a 22-month-old who, if I open the door, will be in Oklahoma by 3. Just adventuresome. Let's go find stuff. Let's go everywhere. He's 22 months old. He's not even 2. And he's already climbing out of his crib. Not just climbing out. Like, he'll jump to the other side. He sees him up, not afraid of it. And just like, all right. And then just tosses himself off the side. And I'm going, he's going to break an arm? Something's going to happen? And it's part of me wants to go, until something snaps, he's not going to learn. I don't want anything to snap. So it's like, all right, well, let's put him in a, I don't know, do we put not even a 2-year-old in a big boy bed and then just put up a gate in the room and be like, stay in the room? And I was like, he'll climb that fence too. What do we do with this kid? Is there like baby locks that you can just lock a kid in for the night? Does that exist? And if not, why not? Have we gone 10,000 years of human history and not invented that as parents yet? Some way to chain kids to beds outside of what could... Yeah, we probably shouldn't do that. There's like fire codes and all these other things. But in general, I'm learning that this little character of his is adventuresome and wants everything. But what I found is, even though I have to be the disciplinarian for him consistently, I have found that the boy craves and desires and wants boundaries. He wants to know, which is why he pushes them. Where's too far? Where is okay? Anybody that kid? Okay. You know. Anybody the cautious kid? Okay. You guys found out the boundaries by watching siblings get in trouble. That's what you did. You were like, I like to call this the smart one. See, I was that kid. My wife is my son. That's what I've learned. I'm like, this is not me. Where's this from? And she's like, that would be me. And I'm like, well, you did this. Craves boundaries. Wants to know how far. Now we have, if we're honest, a generation that has grown up to believe that parents are meant to be friends. Now as a minister and as a youth minister, I work all the time. I tell parents, your job is not to be your kids' friends. Your job is to be there to help train them in the Lord. They are not even your kids. They are on loan from God. That's the way you have to look at them from a soul perspective. You have been given this responsibility by God Himself to train them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. They're on loan from Him. You're not their friend all the time. I look forward to the day where I can be friends, I mean true friends, the way that I'm friends with my parents now, because those relationships do change over time. I look at my parents now and my father hasn't spanked me since I was probably 10 years old. But you know what it would take now for my father, because of how much love and respect I have for him to say those simply words, I'm disappointed. And you know what that would do to me? That would be the most soul-crushing, no, bring me back your love. Like, it would just be overwhelming in that moment. Because I've been taught that I know the boundaries, and I've been taught by a father who loved me, who shared with me what I need to know in this world. How I'm supposed to live out in this world. What the better way is in this world. When it says, my son, do not regard lightly the discipline of the Lord, this instruction, we often miss out on the fact that sometimes God will use instructions that we don't like or understand. In fact, honest mom here, how many of you have ever looked at the Bible at times and say, it just kind of looks like a lot of do not do this and do not do that? That's what it's so often even, I hate to say, preached and taught that way. Now, is that in there? Absolutely. But it's never meant to be, don't do this because. Instead, it's don't do this because there's a better way. There's a deeper life I'm inviting you into. There's a reason why God said one man, one woman for life. And it's because there's joy to be found in that relationship. There's passion to be found in that relationship. There's peace to be found in that relationship. There's a reason why God says, take care of your bodies. Don't be given to drunkenness. And don't, because it leads to destruction. I've never met, and I've worked with a lot of alcoholics, I've never met an alcoholic who was like, I'm really excited I started drinking. Ever. I've never met one that was like, this went really well for me and my family. Instead, it's always the opposite. I always hear, I wish I'd never begun. I wish I'd never started. I've never met a drug addict who's excited about the fact they're a drug addict. I've met people who are addicts who can't stand not having it, but I've never met somebody who's like, I love the way this is going for me in life. Instead, I find people who go, I cannot stand not having that craving, not having that need and that desire, but they hate what it does. And that's in every homeless shelter, every place I've worked in, every place I've been in worldwide. It's a universal thing that there are reasons God sets boundaries for us all. It's because that's what loving fathers do. They set boundaries for their children. Now, we have a bad habit of testing those. We have a bad habit of oftentimes not trusting those. But this is how I feel. Anybody ever said that out loud? All right, let's. This is always a fun conversation to have, especially with teenagers and some adults in the rooms. Is there anybody more fickle when it comes to feelings than teenage girls? Just going to throw this out there. Really like that boy. Next week, he's dead to me. Am I wrong? Tell me I'm wrong about this. They're going, how does he know? Did he read our diary? Like, what's happening? No, I'm just telling you, I work with teenage girls all the time. 85% of my youth group is teenage girls. Okay? I see it and I hear it all the time. They're like, oh, this boy, he's so cute and everything. The next week, they're like, he liked that other girl, so no. Mm-mm, he is not for me. I'm like, have you ever talked to him? I don't even know his name. Now, boys aren't any better, but it's over stupid stuff. Even worse stuff. Typically, it's and I love this transition when it happens. Usually, I'm 7th and 8th grade. Where the guys are like, man, y'all. I'm just going to use you guys. Y'all are boys right there. Y'all hang out. Y'all do your thing. The second one of these young ladies at any point in time says, hey, what's up? Y'all would be like, peace, guys, I'm out. And y'all are gone. Y'all are with them instantly. You're like, love you guys. I feel very different now about life. Am I wrong? Emotionally schizophrenic. Teenagers in general are emotionally schizophrenic. You guys are all over the place. But it's not that emotions are wrong. Is that emotions can deceive. Emotions can lie. And you see, the reason our culture has gone such down a path that where marriages are falling apart nonstop is because they still believe in the Hollywood concept of marriage and love. That it's always going to be great. It's always going to be wonderful. Instead of the reality of, you have to work to love people. That's been far more my experience in life in general when it comes to people. That it's a job to work at people, to love them in spite of who they are. And that's why I love my wife so much, is because she chooses to be with me in spite of me. In spite of the person that I am. That she sees beyond those things. Nor be weary when reproved by him. We don't like to be disciplined. But instead, God here says, do not regard lightly the discipline of the Lord, nor be weary. Do not grow weary in the fact that God wants to grow you. How many of you enjoy swimming? Anybody here like swimming? I enjoy swimming. Now, that's a very different thing. Notice I didn't say, how many of you are like pool people? Ocean people? Totally. And some of you are like, nope, not going in the ocean. That's a scary place. I've seen Shark Week. Like, I am not going out there. Totally get that. Totally with you on that one. I have a very different experience at the ocean than I do at a pool. Like when I'm at a pool, I'm like, oh, the deep end. 6.5 feet. You know, it's like, that's the deep end. And it's like, you can't even dive into it. It's very different though. But I remember as a child, the deep end seemed like the scariest place in the world. And my dad was one of those that was like, you're going to learn how to swim. I'm not kidding. Chucked us in the deep end. It was like, swim. You learn real quick. Like fight or flight kicks in. You're like, okay, if I look like a dog, this works. I'm a dog. you learn how to swim. But I'll tell you what, my dad didn't do that when we went into the ocean. First of all, I don't think you throw that far. Again, remember Michelangelo? It's more my dad. But the ocean also causes something different for us. When we arrive there, there's almost like a natural respect that's happening. It's why we go to mountaintops and it's why we go to oceans, is that there's this sense of wonder that comes over all of us. Why do we sit there for hours with just water going over and over again? We're like, this is amazing. When you actually stop and think about it, it's not. But when you actually stop and realize what you're in awe of, it's of God and of those things. You see, far too often we look at the discipline of the Lord like it's a pool. So I'm supposed to learn that? 6.5 foot, it's not even that dangerous anymore. Okay. But have you ever seen how far out you could swim? Anybody? Been like, I just want to see what happens. And then you get about 40, 50 yards offshore and you're like, I'm good. And you turn around and go back. Because you start to feel overwhelmed by the depth of the things that are happening around you in life. That's been more my experience and faith than a pool. But you see, faith so often seems artificial. And that's what a pool is it not? It's artificial. Real life is that there's a deep end. And the invitation is to come into the deep end. That God actually invites you and says, there's going to be times where you feel like you're going underwater. Don't worry, I have you. I'm right there with you. I'll lift you up when that time comes. That's when you will rest in me. Swim. You see, you can stand on the shoreline and never actually get involved in faith. You can sit there and go, I'm a Christian. I'm a swimmer. And never once step into the water. Never once step out into the waves even. Because those first waves, if you don't realize, getting past those first waves that come at you can be terrifying if you don't know and understand waves. Until you get used to the motion, okay? Life's like this sometimes. It has its ups and downs. Over and over again. And you finally take it a little bit further out. And then you get to a point where you suddenly have to actually swim. And then you start to grow weary and you start to grow tired. And those are moments when God says, it's okay, I got you. I love the thing. Y'all know the story about Peter and Jesus coming out walking on the water? Y'all know why I will love this story more than anything? Is there is a boat that Peter steps out of with all of his friends on it. And then Jesus comes walking. He says, tell me to step out on the water. And he starts walking on the water. The waves and the wind start to overwhelm him. He takes his eyes off Jesus. And we always blame Peter like he's the worst guy in the world. And he's like, and then Peter had a little faith and started sinking. Who did he reach for? Jesus, not the boat. We forget that aspect, don't we? That when he started to sink, instead of turning back to the thing that he knows is solid and floats on water, because that makes sense, he reached for Jesus. That holds him up. Look at the second part of this verse. For the Lord disciplines the ones he loves. Not only do we not like to be disciplined, but we often forget that a God and a true Father, a Father who loves us beyond beliefs, will bring things in your life that will cause you to, in your way, struggle. But in His way, it's for your growth. Any athletes in here? Anybody play sports? Okay. I'm going to figure out one of these things of what y'all do over there. Either that or you don't have the ability to raise your hand. I can't figure it out. But sports of some sort. Or bands. Anybody? Band? Okay, a few in the band. Okay. And here's the premise of all this. That if you don't practice, what do the coaches and the band directors do? You've never really tested that, have you? Because if you don't do what's supposed to happen, then you don't play, you don't march, you don't any of those things. What happens to an athlete who physically works out for a long time and then stops and doesn't anymore? Loses everything he did. It's called atrophy. Spiritually speaking, we're in the same boat. If you don't work that out consistently, and if God doesn't bring things into your life to help you, we see struggles instantly. Anybody here have a kid at school that bothers you all the time? Okay? Don't point to them. Okay. In general, we have these, but you learn. We never see these kind of that these could be blessings and how we can learn to deal with people, or a blessing in how you learn to love others in spite of themselves. We never see them as opportunities. In fact, there's a song. I don't know if you guys all know the lyrics. I don't know all the lyrics to it, but it's, what if our blessings come through storms? What if our blessings come through raindrops? What if that's the way it works? What if it comes through ways that we can't understand in the moment? And I'm going to give you a very personal one from my perspective. I don't share this, honestly, very often. My senior year, I was doing everything you were supposed to do. And I had no idea I was going to tell this story until about 30 seconds ago. I was doing everything you were supposed to do as a senior in college at a Bible Christian school. I was engaged to be married to a wonderful Christian woman. I had a job lined up in youth ministry. I was doing all the things you're supposed to do along the way. Until my fiance had a mental breakdown caused by some things in her past that caused her to have schizophrenia and multiple personalities. Have you ever had to tell somebody that you love very dearly that you can't marry them because they need mental help until they're willing to get the help? And then by the way, wedding rings hurt when they hit you in the face. I found that out to be true because she threw it back at me and literally cut my face with the ring. It's awesome now to look back on. I'm like, that's a weird story. And this is the shortened version of the story because she was unwilling to get any help, didn't think there was any problems, but it was very clear to all of us that she was having a massive mental breakdown due to stress and a lot of things. And I'd love to tell you that there's a happy ending to that story, but it's the last time I ever saw her was when she threw the ring in my face and left. And all I've heard since then is that she's living on the streets in Nashville. That's all I ever know. And I'll be honest with you, there was moments for about 2 months where I wallowed in my own misery going, that's messed up. Because I was doing everything you were supposed to do. She was a wonderful Christian young lady. I was at a Christian school. I'm a Bible major. What else am I supposed to do, God, in this situation? Was I supposed to just marry her and not act like we had any problems or any issues that were there or any of these? What was I supposed to do with all of this? And then I had a very loving friend who came to my house one day and said, Brandon, I love you, but can you get over yourself? And I went, that's kind of a jerk thing to say. Have you had a fiance go schizophrenic recently? And he was like, no, but seriously, like, when are you going to do something for somebody else? This isn't all about you. And I remember going, okay, well, what do you have in mind? And he said, let's do something for somebody else. And I said, okay, like what? And he said, let's move to China. And I said, okay. And I went, wait, what? I'm sorry, what? And he said, let's go to China. Let's go work over there. And I knew that in that moment, that moving to China and going across the ocean to do the things that we were going to do was going to take a complete abandonment of everything that I had planned for my life. Everything that I wanted, everything that I was told by everybody else what I was supposed to do. But instead, allow this moment, this opportunity for growth, to help change me. And I can be honest with you guys today that the 3 years that I spent in China were the ones that changed my life the most. It's also when, right before I moved to China, I went back to Searcy and I ran into an old friend who, later on, there was this new thing called Facebook in 2005, brand new. And I got on it to keep up with friends back at home that I was leaving behind. And got on Facebook and I saw this Facebook profiles change from in a relationship to single. And it was a friend of mine, and I can tell you today it's the love of my life that I've spent the last 11 years with and have two wonderful children with and travel the world with, and she is my sanity in all things. I didn't see that coming. I didn't see any of those things coming because I wasn't looking for the opportunities even in the storms. I wasn't looking for how God works even in the hard times. But haven't we seen this, and can't we say this and see this openly when it comes to the storms we've seen? Just take Hurricane Irma and Harvey. Have you seen the stories of incredible compassion and sacrifice that have taken place? Even the stories in the shooting in Las Vegas and others. Have you not seen and heard of all these hundreds of stories of awesomeness that have come from it? In spite of the evil that Satan means for this world, that they can come great things from it. And this is why I'm telling you, this is the worst lesson in the world to share with somebody who doesn't understand that God oftentimes can work through all scenarios. Because we make the entire world about us. So when I have pain and suffering and I'm unwilling to give that to God and say, use this We live in a broken world. Pain and suffering is going to happen. But I love that I have a God who can turn around that pain and suffering and go, I can use that if you'll let me. I can make something great out of that. And let me give you a Bible story in closing that I think you guys will catch. Y'all know the story of feeding the 5,000, right? Favorite story. I think I've figured out by now that I have a really weird way of seeing Scripture. And this is the fun part. So the disciples come to Jesus and Jesus goes, we have a large crowd. I need you to feed them. And they go, what? What do they say? Basically, they're like, it would take 6 months' wages to pay for all these people's food. As if Jesus didn't already know that. I love that. It's like, don't you know this, Jesus? And of course, he did. Then he goes, what do you have? And they come back. They're like, what? What do we have? What? Five loaves and two fish, which he also knew. Now, we know he didn't steal it from the boy, right? So he didn't just go over there and take it. Do you think he went over and go, can I use that? Can I? And I'm pretty sure the boy gave. Now, side note, can you imagine the boy when he went home? Mom, breakfast you gave me? Dude took it, fed 5,000 people. And then she was like, liar, go to your room. Like, that's totally how that story worked out, right? Like, nobody's believing that later on. Like, that kid definitely got in trouble later on that day for lying. They're like, that's not how this happens. But what I love the most is that he basically asks two questions. He says, what do you have and can I use it? And I often think that he looks at our lives, the lives that we've broken, the lives that we've sinned and caused to fall short of the glory of God, and looks at that life and goes, hey, what do you got? And by the way, he already knows. And then he says, can I use that? You see, because I can't feed 5,000 people. But he can. A little side note in history, and this is my favorite part. Did you ever catch how many basketfuls there were left over after? 12. One for every one of the little doubters. Did you catch that? He's like, 12. Each one of you is carrying all the leftover pieces because you thought I couldn't do it. And he made him carry it. Right? In the last minute here, let me just share this. For the Lord disciplines the one he loves and chastises every son whom he receives. That the discipline of God, even the pain and sorrow and the sufferings that come in our world, can be used by him to great measure. Some of the greatest stories, and I hate to use this word because it's been so misused by the denominational world, but testimonies, what people say about their own lives, the stories they share about their own lives and what's happened to them, those stories are so powerful in changing the lives of others. Now, it's the gospel through those stories that's changing people. We get that, right? That is the gospel lived out in real life. The greatest thing that people will ever see outside of being able to see Jesus is seeing Jesus through you, through your life, when you love them. So when you're in high school and you go to school and you're different and you're okay with it, and I'm telling you, when I say I've accepted the fact that I'm different, it's not just that I'm weird and that I speak multiple languages and I'm not from this place. It's because of the fact that I realized that Jesus called me to be different, and I found out that to be a whole lot more fun and a whole lot more joyful in this world. Because when bad things happen, when you lose a job, when somebody makes fun of you at school because you're a Christian or because you won't do the things that you want, I get to smile and go, okay, can I tell you about what real joy looks like? Where it's not a fake facade, where it's not just this. You guys realize that that's not going to end well for you. I mean, everything in history has told us that's not going to end well for you. Instead, can I invite you into the deep end? Come swim. There's a deeper thing to this life. And yeah, it's going to be hard, but guess what? My God knows what to do with the tough times. He walks with me through those. He lifts me up through those. And man, I'll take that any day over being by myself and not knowing what to do anymore, because I've been there and I'm not going back. And when you look at that from the standpoint of what the rest of your friends must be feeling like in this world, don't tell me there's not a problem of emptiness, of brokenness, of broken promise. Ladies, y'all know this. You live in a world with girls who are unbelievably insecure in who they are, what they look like, what everybody thinks about them, and they have no idea how to get out of that rut. No idea. So they cover it up more, and so then they put on new things or they take things off. That's what they do. Guys, we hide behind this, either this machismo of I'm awesome, I can take on the world by myself, when in reality we see suicide rates skyrocketing, we see sexuality all over the place, and we see all of these things, all because they're screaming out for one thing, which is hope in Jesus. And you have it. Show it through your lives. But it's going to take you stepping out into the deep end. And when you do, you have to realize it might get hard. And there might be tough conversations. And there might be sacrifices you have to make. Where you say, hey, I love you guys, but I can't spend time with you if you're constantly going to be doing all these negative things. If y'all want to hang out and do something great, y'all can come to my house. My parents would love to have you over. We'll hang out at our house. And can I just give you, this is just a little side note. That was the greatest thing my parents ever did for us. Our home was a safe haven for anybody in the neighborhood. Always open, no matter the time or day of night. And I would have friends who would come in 11:30 at night. My mom would go, he's here again. But I always knew what she meant. He knows he's safe here. She knows she's safe here. But the lost art of hospitality is what's killing kids, and it's what's killing families, by the way. We don't go into each other's homes. Bless each other. Love each other. Invite each other into the deep end. Support each other as you swim the hard times. God disciplines the ones He loves so that you might grow in newness and walk with Him in faith. I said this after my first class, and I'll say this again. It's a very misused word, but I want you to hear it from me, because it may be the only time you hear it today, because I don't know where you're all coming from, and I don't know all your background. But I love you, and you're loved. That there is a God in heaven who wants to see you in eternity with Him. You're not alone. If you need any help, talk to someone. Spend time with someone. If you just have questions about faith, welcome to the deep end of the pool. That's what that is. It's a need to know more. Would you mind if we close in prayer? Father, I'm so grateful for this time, for each and every one of these young men, young women, these adults, these others that are here, God. We're just so grateful for them. Bless us. Guide us. Help us to be different in this world, to realize that not only have you called us to be different, but there is joy in that. There is peace and rest in that. But help us to see that you want us to be a light in this world, to help show people through the storms, and those storms that only you can calm, but you can also use. God, it's hard to ask, but discipline us. Help us that we may grow in our faith in you. We ask all this through your Son, Jesus' name. Amen.